The Athletic.
Mbappe, 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 dog.
Categorical. Day 15 of the World Cup saw France tear holes in the polls, and then Sunday night, England-Senegal. Harry and the Henderson and Saka for Southgate, which England fans are no longer calling for. Who'll be the favourite when Maguire and co meet Mbappe next weekend? Well, we'll talk about that. And this Monday's matches too, with Japan against Croatia and Brazil facing South Korea. It's totally at the World Cup, sponsored by LiveScoreBet.
Kane has a look to his left. Challenge comes in on him, but the ball bounces to Foden. Foden's away, keeps his feet on the left. Foden's crossed. Oh. Saka is in there! It's 3-0!
Day 15. Oh, and on the way, we got some Julian Laurent. We've got Taz Okawa from Japan. Ooh, we got Lindsay Hooper. Hello, Lindsay.
Hello.
Hello, here in the Athletic Box Park, drenched in kombucha and Lord knows what else. We got Carl Anker.
Hello, James.
And on the line from the Albet, which we've now decided is what it's called, Stadium, we've got Jack Pitbrook. All right, Jack.
Hi, James.
Tell you what, Jack, call your boss. You're not getting into work tomorrow.
Well, yeah, it actually turned out to be a much easier game than it felt it was going to be after about 30, 35 minutes. I thought England were really quite poor for most of the first half. And it was the kind of game where maybe if Senegal had had Sadio Mane, they would have been able to take advantage. But as it happened, they didn't. And it's really those two goals at the end of the first half killed the game. Mm. The second half was remarkably easy for a World Cup last 16.
Well, indeed so. We'll get much more of that as we have a proper chat about this 3-0 win for England over Senegal. But just to round up the other results, I mean, there is only one other result from today, so it won't take long. This afternoon, Sunday afternoon for you, listener. France beating Poland 3-1. Goal from Giroud and two from Mbappe. And that means that they are going to meet England. England, who were 3-0 winners Sunday night against Senegal. Right. Well, Jack, you were just saying about the fact that England didn't look good for the first half hour or so. And I know what you mean. It was an uncomfortable opening to the game. But I would suggest that supporters of every nation at this World Cup have had similar experiences with France Sunday afternoon. They gave up chances for Poland. It's what England did after that against the African champions that marked this out, for me, as one of the most accomplished performances I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I thought their counter-attacking was really, really good. People thought that it was quite a cautious team when it was announced, but having Bellingham and Henderson allowed to get forward by the presence of Wright worked incredibly well. It was very, very difficult for Senegal to stop them when they started breaking forward. And the goals that England scored were fantastic. So, yeah, definitely more pluses than minuses, even though you do wonder if a better team might have punished some of England's shaky moments in the first half.
I mean, they are the African champions, but I hear what you're saying. Carl, what did you make of it?
I thought this was the most comprehensive performance England have had in around the 16 games since, I mean, me and producer Charlie tried racking our brains to find a better round of 16 performance, and we landed on 2002 against Denmark. I think in a World Cup, that's the most in control England have been. This is what Southgate does. This is sufferable football where you sacrifice a bit of attacking endeavour for defensive solidity. And while you are not always totally sure England are going to win games, you are reasonably confident that he's not going to lose a game in 90 minutes. So Southgate now is the best head coach England, or has got the most victories of an England head coach at international tournaments. Of the 15 victories in knockout games in international tournaments, Gareth Southgate is now responsible for 6 of them. He is very good at international tournament football, especially in knockout football. You can argue whether or not there are managers in this World Cup who are better than him at that. But at this job, it might not be the most entertaining, but you don't necessarily win these sorts of games by being massively entertaining.
All right. Although, were you not entertained? Lindsay, were you not entertained?
For the first 35 minutes, I was concerned, and what was going through everybody else's mind was going through mine, which was against France. I think they would have punished us by that 35-minute mark. It was too slow. It was too methodical from England. So, you know, although I don't want to just dwell on the negatives, because, of course, it turned into a fantastic performance, I do want to say that when it comes to being pedestrian, that is something that you just won't get away with France, not when they've got the pace of Mbappe. I do think that Jordan Henderson, when the game first started, he was in a more advanced position and he was closing things down. And I did think that he ended up having a brilliant game overall, but he had a few patches where he went missing for a little bit. But I did like the fact that he was squeezing up to start, because he along with Kane and Bellingham were the only ones that had drive and determination. And I don't want to criticise Maguire too much, but his passing was off. It definitely was off in the first 20, 30 minutes. And he was trying to look forward, but it put England in danger. And I hope that they watch that back, because against France in particular, I think they would make us pay.
Mm. Well, there's a lot of players we should celebrate from that performance. Jack, they're at the Albert, is it, stadium. What are you going with tonight?
I'm going with Albert.
Albert?
I don't know. I might be wrong.
What the hell? Let's try
and
that.
And did Senegal take the bait?
I think they might have done, Lindsay. I think they, I thought they, like I said, I thought they played pretty well for most of the first half. But when this was a game that they would have wanted to play on the counter-attack, but the first two goals really came from England playing on the counter-attack, and England managing to exploit Senegal perhaps being a little bit too far up the pitch, not having enough pressure on the ball, and England cut straight through them. Then equally, I wonder, is that down to tactics, or is that just down to the fact that England have better players? Like when Bellingham is driving forward through the middle of the pitch, he's very, very difficult to stop. Like, he is an unbelievably good player. And ultimately, I think, you know, Senegal didn't have the capacity to live with England when they got into that mood.
Yeah, I think it was 6-1 and half a dozen of the other. I think international tournament football, when it becomes single elimination, it becomes less, are you the best team across that 90 minutes from minute 1 to minute 90, and becomes more, can you be slightly better than your opposition by minute 90? And everyone keeps talking about England were not good until minute 35. And minute 35 is when Bellingham has that little bit of drive.
Well, I think one of the other key questions, and this is something that came up the other night with the US against the Netherlands, can you take your chances? And if we look at the first 35 minutes, yes, Senegal had opportunities, but one England player did outstandingly, Jordan Pickford, with that incredible save on Boulaye Dia. And then England did take their chances. And let's talk about the goals, because that extraordinary opening goal from Henderson, becoming the second oldest England goal scorer ever. Jack, what was that like watching that in the stadium?
Yeah, that was amazing. I absolutely loved those first two goals. Like the first one, the way that Bellingham broke all the way forward, you know, that's kind of why you want him in the teams. His ability to, he's got an amazing kind of range to his game, the way that he can kind of run beyond Kane, take the pass from Kane, make the cross through to Henderson. You know, obviously, Southgate was criticised in the last Euros because he would always play Rice alongside Calvin Phillips. And Phillips is a really good player, but he doesn't have that. He's not really someone who affects the final third in quite the same way Bellingham was. We saw him making that great run to score the header against Iran, and it was another great run. Great runs, really, for the first and second goals here. So, yeah, a brilliant team goal.
Mm. And then that extraordinary moment in which he stared into the abyss of Hendo's eyes.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it was obviously there are two players at kind of opposite ends of their international careers. You know, it does feel as if they do have an awful lot of respect for one another. They seem to enjoy playing together. And fantastic kind of attacking midfield combination there, anchored by Rice.
They forgot they were lions for a second, didn't they? They thought they were rhinos in a headlock, which was baffling for a while. But yeah, that was the first move of purpose. I just can't heap enough praise on Jude Bellingham, because I felt he dragged us into this match single-handedly. He had purpose. When everything else was looking a little bit stale and cold, he was the one that was trying to pick things up and move things on. And let's remember, he's 19. So I think the future for England is so bright with some of the players in this squad. But he was the player of the match for me. And he made that first goal, but he was instrumental in the second one. I know he won't get the assist, but the way that he intercepts the ball, picks it up, runs with it, again, setting a beautifully weighted ball through for Foden. I just think he deserves so much. And I hope that the newspapers, when we pick them up tomorrow, is just full of Bellingham. I think he deserves it.
Yeah, full of Bellingham to Liverpool stories, I'm sure. What about the Saka goal, Jack? And the Foden run, actually, what about the Foden run for that?
Well, I thought on the second goal, the most impressive thing was the way that Bellingham won a 50-50, which is almost maybe a kind of 40-60 in the opposition's favour in the middle of the pitch. Then he kind of burst past another opponent, and all of a sudden he'd taken the ball, he'd kind of broken past two opponents. He had a huge amount of space in front of him. He could charge forward and then quickly shifted the balance of his body so he could play a left-footed pass out to Foden. It was amazing. I mean, there's times watching Bellingham where He reminds me of, he's a lot of like young Steven Gerrard, also a bit of young Michael Ballack in terms of, you know, his ability to kind of stride forward down the middle of the pitch, his authority, the way he shrugs off challenges and gets in the box. Like, he really is a phenomenal player, and even more impressive when you watch him up close, or I mean, we're not that close in the press box here at the very top level of the Albaite Stadium in a really important game. Like, I cannot emphasize enough for our listeners back in the UK how good he was.
All right. Jack, there at the Albaite Stadium, there were so many things to enjoy. Gianni Infantino looking miserable in the VIP seats once again. What else did you have? What did you have for the pre-match entertainment? Which random singer did they bring out? And what other moments stood out for you there of the whole experience?
I think the pre-match music was the Overtones.
Oh, wow.
I was sat next to a friend of the show, Michael Cox, and that's, he was showing me their Wikipedia page. So I think that's what it was, but I don't actually remember it. It wasn't as headline-grabbing as Chesney Hawkes, who, of course, played for halftime during the England versus USA game the other day. To be honest, I mean, the Albaite Stadium is a very, very visually impressive place. It kind of, from the outside, it's meant to look like a big Bedouin tent. It is a long way from Doha. It's about an hour's drive out of Doha. So you're just driving through desert up until you get here. And, you know, it is, you can see how much money has been, you get a real sense of the amount of money that has been spent on this World Cup and how much, you know, the huge amount of effort that has gone in from all sorts of forms of effort, I suppose, to make it, because it is, you know, there's no getting past the fact it is a visually very impressive stadium, although you do wonder what really the point of it is and how much, you know, in the sense of how much football will be played here in 2023 and beyond.
Well, of course, this night is about so many things. It's also, when you mention that, it does remind us again about what it cost, not just in money, to build it all.
Absolutely.
Jack, can I ask one quick question before you go? Was the one better performance than England tonight, and was it that of the Senegal band and dancers that did not stop? We were watching back at home and it looked like a carnival, and it looked like they never stopped moving for all of those cutaways.
Yeah, they were wonderful. I mean, the problem with, look, there's a general problem with World Cup games, which is that the atmosphere isn't good because there aren't that many fans here. And the atmosphere that there is largely conditioned by the music that the stadium announcers play. It's very homogenised, it's very corporate, it's very sterilised. This was the best atmosphere game I've been to, because it was created by the fans. It was created by the Senegal band, who were kind of down in front of us to our right, with their drums and music and dancing, which was consistent all the way through the game, no matter what happened. So I thought they were brilliant. They really made the atmosphere here. Even though their team didn't really show up for the second half. So, yeah, they were great.
Excellent stuff, Jack. Many, many thanks for that. And look forward to catching up with you again soon.
My absolute pleasure.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Jack Pitt-Brook. Crikey. Well, it does sound like it was quite an affair there. Here's a stat for you. 23% of all of England's World Cup goals ever have come under the stewardship of Gareth Southgate.
He might be good at this.
Well,
this is the strange thing. And obviously, the conversation has been Southgate has been a dour, pragmatic coach, which I think is a bit of a misnomer, because pragmatism doesn't necessarily mean you're playing defensive football or conservative football. It just means realistic application of your tools.
But anyway.
And Southgate, you know, maximises, you know, clean sheets are very important. First ball forward, when you win the ball, maximise your set pieces. And I think the big difference between this England team at this World Cup compared to the Euros and the 2018 in Russia is just how much better they are with that final ball in the final third. They are, I think, what's 3 goals out of 4 shots on target against Senegal. They're a lot better at making the correct decisions when push comes to shove.
Nice.
And at a time where Southgate would prefer you to only really have 3 or 4 shots on goal and kill off 25 minutes of a game. That's really important.
Okay. He turns you on again. Lindsay, how are you feeling?
Oh, I love him. I've always been in the camp of loving him ever since Russia. But I also agree that sometimes he does seem to have favourites. And that was something at the very beginning that we were promised that that wouldn't happen. It would be picked on form. So that's the only little chink. But that always is going to happen with any England manager. They end up having the players that they can trust and rely on. So you get it. And I also hope that he's not afraid to learn from the way that these first two goals came about against Senegal. It was from being more direct. It was from a long ball. It was from not playing out at the back as much. So I think he's the sort of manager that does do that. He looks back and then he doesn't get too rigid. And I think against France, you're going to have to be brave.
All right. Everyone seems a bit spooked by France. So how about next up on Totally at the World Cup? We hear from Julien Laurens on how they got on in their game Sunday afternoon against Poland.
This is the Totally Football Show, sponsored by LiveScoreBet, the home of squads. Squads is a weekly free-to-play game. You reveal five players across the week which make up your squad, and you can earn cash each time they score in the selected games. The cash amount is decided by LiveScoreBet's prize wheel and can range from 10p up to £50 per goal, which you can spend once the final player is revealed. Find out more and play squads for yourself for free at LiveScoreBet.com or by downloading the LiveScoreBet app on Android and iPhone. It's over 18s only and full terms and conditions apply. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Le 1 contre 1 face à Cash, ballon pour Mbappé, la frappe.
My word, what a language, eh? Even sounds lovely in French. And they were looking lovely after a slightly tense opening period for them as well against Poland. But the reigning World and Nations League champions through to the quarterfinals, where they'll meet England next Saturday. Yes, our favourite France fan is Julien Laurens. And we spoke to him after that game and, crucially, for a bit later on in our conversation, before England faced Senegal. Here's what he said. Remember when, before the tournament began, people were down on Deschamps, thought the team would be boring, thought they would miss Benzema?
Yeah. No, because yeah, you're right. We arrived here with, I think, some doubts and some question marks over the injuries, over how the team will react to those injuries, what Deschamps would do in terms of tactics and starting 11 and personnel and all that kind of stuff. And but I promise you, it was not a given that they would play that well and they would get that far either. And I don't think even Deschamps himself was too convinced about, you know, what you do in midfield, what you do up front, who you play, how the back three, the back four. I think there was still a lot of things to ponder, to sort out, to think of. And I have to be honest, the way Deschamps has done it, he deserves a lot of credit because he's clearly found a formula that works. They might be out once they face a team that is better than what they faced so far. But certainly for the opposition that they've had, they've been really good. And everything that he's tried, everything that he's put in place, whether it's Griezmann as a number eight, whether it's Theo Hernandez at left back, Rabiot in that kind of midfield, left position if you want, Mbappe, all that kind of stuff so far has been working.
All right. And Giroud's been working particularly. The French goal scoring record, Jules.
My guy. Yeah, what a special night for him. You know, the players were waiting for him. So he had a guard of honor leaving the pitch, you know, where they all lined up and then they were like hitting his head, you know, as he was walking through. And then they were waiting for him in the dressing room to, like, you know, to celebrate with him, but also celebrate his record. And the thing is, he was picked for doping. his name was picked up for doping. So he had to go and doping at the World Cup, I mean, which is the same in the league, but you basically come in the tunnel and then the doping guys, like, you have to go straight away. You can't go back in the dressing room for 5 minutes and then come out. So he didn't even get in. So, like, everybody was waiting for him, and they obviously had to wait for him to pee, which is, which is okay. But yeah, maybe on another day he would have celebrated straight away in the dressing room with the rest of the squad. This time they had to wait a little bit.
Okay. Jules, we get used to the idea of Giroud, but really what an incredible career this guy's had. What is he now, 36? And we think where he came from and where he's got to, it is remarkable.
It is incredible. I think people underestimate the career that he's had, the things that he's won, the goal that he scored. When you think about it, this is someone that no one believed in when he was younger. It's very different to what Kylian Mbappe or Thierry Henry or Nicolas Negre, you know, those kind of guys who were prodigies when they were 12, 15, 17, when they made their debut with the pros when they were 17 and they were the next big thing. That was not like him. You know, at 17, he thought, may as well stop playing football because no one believes in me. No academies, no clubs, nothing. He had to go through all the lower leagues, literally every single one, fourth division, third division, second division, first division, Ligue 1 in France, and then come to England. But it's incredible when you see him right up there, you know, being the all-time leading goal scorer for the French national team, to have all those caps, to have won everything that he's won, when he was that close of giving up on football, really. But the fact is that he never gave up. He kept always believing in him. He worked really hard. And for me, who's known him for a long time now, to see him scoring today, to be in that stadium was very special.
Very nice. Mbappe jumping into his arms after his goal as well. He loves his pivot.
He likes his pivot, especially when he can feed him like that, because that ball from Kylian on the first goal is magnificent. And so is his finish. But it's a finish on his strong foot, Olivier's left foot. It's a finish that he scored hundreds of times in his life. And even Chesney at the top of his game, because Chesney had been magnificent in this World Cup so far, even he could not save that. So there's a good understanding. Remember 18 months ago before the Euros when Giroud said, well, when I make runs, the ball doesn't come, and which was clearly a dig at Mbappe, and Mbappe took it that way, even if Giroud didn't mention Mbappe's name. I think they put a lot of water in their wine since, and now they kind of, would you say, kissed and, you know, kissed and tell?
Kiss and made up. Yeah. But I'm interested, they put up a lot of water in the wine.
Yeah, that's what we say in French. I thought you were saying that maybe in English. You say that in French for when you kind of want to tone down the tension.
Okay.
And basically because the water dilutes your wine, right?
Yeah.
So if you put water in your wine, then your wine is now maybe whatever.
I gotcha. Jules, let's talk about Mbappe a little bit, because the doping controllers weren't the only people taking the pee on Sunday. Mbappe was just ridiculous.
Yeah, incredible performance, really. And to be fair, it was still not perfect. It could have been even better. There's a couple of times where you think that he'd won the race with Matty Cash, for example, and at literally the last second, Cash manages to get the ball. But otherwise, he could have hurt them even more. So incredible. I think L'Equipe were telling me before I left the stadium, they gave him 8 out of 10. Le Parisien gave him 9 out of 10. I think L'Equipe could have pushed him a little bit more, maybe. But L'Equipe don't give half points. Just for your information, you don't care, but I'm telling you still. Otherwise, I think he might have had 8.5. Just an incredible performance. The first goal, I think everybody, including Chesney, expects the curler. And instead, he chooses to hit it really hard with his laces on the other side. And then his second, France's third, this one he curls it. And I think everybody expects the curler. And he's the curler, and yet you still can't stop it. It's remarkable. We said, well, I don't know if I was with you because you haven't invited me on the pod for a long time, but when Karim got injured that Saturday night, you know, on the day that the World Cup opened, and Karim went home on the Sunday morning really early, took that 8 o'clock flight to Madrid, I think Kylian felt like, okay, I need to step up here, which is what he always wanted anyway. He keeps saying to everyone, I was born to be on this stage. I was born to shine on this stage. And yeah, you could see as arrogant, and I can't argue with you, but it's just the belief that he has that he's made for those moments. And to have 5 goals already in this World Cup in 4 games, to have carried the team in this game today, which was not easy at the beginning. I think there was a bit of nerves from the French. But yeah, the way that he took on that Poland team, and we'll see whether it's England or Senegal, it might not be, it would be tougher.
Who do you want, Jules?
Oh, I want England. I think Senegal will win. And I want Senegal to win because of my boys who play there.
Right.
But England would be so special. The first time they faced each other in the World Cup since 1982. Mm. The first time they faced each other full stop since 2017. Mm. I think would be very special for the tournament.
Although France-Senegal for the first time since 2002.
Would be pretty special as well with Aliou Cissé on the bench, of course. Deschamps was not playing at the time. He had retired from international football. But still, it would be pretty special to have Cissé against Deschamps on the benches as well.
All right, Jules, I've got two last questions for you. One, are there any concerns that you have? Poland did have chances before.
Mm. One especially, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still think there's a lot of things we can work on. I think the two fullbacks, Koundé on the right, which was not the guy who started the competition, because Pavard was the guy who started against Australia. He was the guy we all thought was number one. Even if we knew that Koundé was a close number two or number one, like, you know, another number one. But Pavard made a mistake in that Australia game that cost France a goal. And after that, Deschamps literally froze him out because he didn't even play against Tunisia when he was France's B team. So Koundé has to improve. And on the left, because Kylian doesn't defend at all, which is part of the tactics and part of the plan, it's not that he doesn't want to do it, he's allowed not to do it. That means that Theo Hernandez is sometimes under pressure. That means Rabiot has to come across and compensate a lot, which is fine. And they've done it really well so far. I thought Rabiot was outstanding today again. But against a team like England or against a team like Senegal, that might not be enough, and we might be under pressure on two flanks. So there's still things to work on, of course. But at least France, you know, I think is still in good shape for the quarterfinals.
Yeah, they look that way. Okay, so the other thing I wanted to know was, who was the pre-game entertainment there? And also, yesterday Michael Cox was telling us about some French cover artists doing a version of Lenny Kravitz's seminal Are You Gonna Go My Way? And
yes,
he asked you.
I've seen him with Coxie as well. We
yeah,
were together
exactly.
For one of the games.
Who is that, Jules?
I don't know. Never heard of him before. Never seen him. He's not very good from what I could tell.
Ooh.
And today we had the boys band that was more of a man band because they looked old. And
which boys
and
band?
Don't know the name. They didn't say the name in the stadium. It was like, I think they did Celebrate Good Times, whatever the real name
the cool
of the
and
song
the gang
is.
Song.
Yeah, but they were dire. They were no cool and no gang. Four dudes. Dancing on the touchline. Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
That's it, really.
All right, Jules.
You know the song that the French have in the dressing room is Freed from Desire? It's their new like, you know, winning song kind of thing. Of course, in 2018, it was Ramener la Coupe à la Maison that I know you know by heart.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think just before I go, a word for Hugo Lloris, who today became the highest capped player in French football history, in men's football history. So well done to him. Level now with Lilian Thuram, whose son Marcus came on in the game, which again was very, very nice on the day that his dad lost the records. And obviously, if everything goes well for the quarterfinals, if there's nothing wrong happening to Lloris, he will beat the record like Giroud beat the goal scoring one today. So a very special night for the Lloris family as well.
Magnificent stuff, Jules. Thank you so much. Let's do this again. Before the quarterfinal.
Yeah, of course. If you invite me, because so far you froze me like Deschamps froze Pavard. So.
All right, Jules. It's been a Sunday rich and laden with storylines, and Giroud, one of the key ones.
Jules has spent much of this year talking about Karim Benzema and how he would end up being the difference maker for this France team. I think Benzema's injury has probably helped this France team. He's probably, you know, with no Benzema and having to play through Giroud.
And Luis Hernandez as well.
It's probably clarified France's attacking form. I think having sometimes in a bigger toolbox isn't as good as just having the best tools. And for international football, Olivier Giroud is remarkable at what you need to do. If you want to progress the ball vertically and break down low blocks, which Poland did for half an hour or so, there are few strikers out there better than Olivier Giroud.
Mm. Poland who came out, their papers were exhorting them to play ball in this game, and they did a bit more. They had shots. They had shots and went out, which is, you usually do it the other way around on a weekend. But anyway, they had three shots on target in this game, which I think was pretty much doubling their total for the World Cup so far. Lindsay, though, I guess it's France that we're talking about, particularly because they're going to be facing England next time, and England are concerned about France. But surely France must have been watching Sunday night and thinking, ooh la la.
I hope so. We'll give a little nod as well to Robert Lewandowski, who did manage to score that penalty in the end. So he goes out on a semi-high, I think, with that one. But yeah, coming back to France, I think that they will have watched England and will hope that when they look at the attack, they will hope that England won't be brave. And from listening to Julien, I think that's the one thing that concerns them, is that England could be more in that driving, determined mood that we see in sparks. But can they do it over a prolonged period? And also by doing that, they are obviously going to leave gaps. And France are a team that can punish sides with that. So you've got to be as aware defensively. And are we as defensively solid as what we appear to be? I don't think that that is true. I think it's a little bit emperor's new clothes. So we haven't had that proper test yet. Could we get preoccupied as well by Mbappe, who's clearly the best player on the planet at the minute? So is there going to be a temptation? Is that what they're hoping, that England will get really distracted by wanting to stop Mbappe, gifting that duty to Kyle Walker, but probably needing reinforcement, and then ignoring the rest of the squad, which is full of talent? You cannot switch off for any of these players. Antoine Griezmann, for instance, has been brilliant. I just think so many have shone that you can't just switch to thinking about one player being dangerous, not in this France team.
So what you're saying is facing the reigning world champions who have the best player on the planet, England might have some problems. Certainly, when you think about how Kyle Walker was struggling with Sarr, the idea of him being up against Mbappe is an intriguing one.
Kyle Walker's been talked up as the fated Mbappe stopper, and certainly had a good 90 minutes added up across two legs when Man City faced PSG in 2020, I want to say. But he looks a couple of yards off that pace now. I completely agree with Lindsay in that you cannot constantly talk about Mbappe, because one big thing about this France team is, you know, they played this asymmetric fullback system where a lot of attacks go down the left-hand side. But the reason they're able to do this is because they've got Ousmane Dembele on the right, who is just phenomenal. Bipedal and ambidextrous, very two-footed, loves getting chalk on his boots, and can absolutely crush someone on that right-hand side as well. And the reason this France team can be so dangerous, especially when they're on the transition, is because you can't simply double up on Mbappe, because it just creates all this space for Dembele.
There's 6 days between now and then, and a lot of other last 16 matches to be played. Monday, another four sides will be taking their chance at making a quarter final. So what do you say we chat about those matches next?
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, sponsored by LifeScoreBet. You can get the latest football betting odds at LifeScoreBet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
All right, Monday at the World Cup, it's Japan-Croatia at 3 o'clock, and then Monday evening, Brazil facing South Korea. We'll talk about Japan very, very shortly with a special guest from Japan. But Brazil and South Korea, they faced each other earlier this year in Seoul in a friendly. Do you know what happened? This.
Vou agora com Gabriel Jesus dentro da área para desencantar. Gol! Gabriel Jesus, finalmente!
Yeah, Brazil 5-1 winners. Gabriel Jesus there, as you probably heard. He won't be available this time, though, because his World Cup is over. He picked up injury, as did Alex Telles in that game against Cameroon last Friday. And reports over the weekend, really serious, actually, for him, talking about a potential absence of around 3 months, which for top of the table Arsenal could be a mighty blow as well. So get well soon to Gabriel Jesus. Apart from his absence, can you think of any reason why this time it might be different to that 5-1 between South Korea and Brazil?
Nothing immediately springs to mind. We've also seen images of Neymar back at training on grass as well, which if you are one of the many who's predicted Brazil to win this World Cup, this could be a rather straightforward victory. I wish all my best to South Korea. I count myself as one of many a Ghana fan that has now switched allegiances to South Korea for the round of 16 for their great work in helping eliminate Uruguay from the group stages.
Right. Apropos, though, Carl, there was a lot of suggestions amid the sadness over Ghana's exit that it was ameliorated by the sight of one Luis Suarez in tears. Is that a trade-off that you would have been willing to make at the start of the World Cup?
At the start, probably not. After one game, absolutely, I would have bitten your hand off. I described it the morning after. I felt a bit like I lost the game, but I've won it on away goals. This is incredibly petty from myself and from many Ghanaian football fans, but I think I saw quite a few videos and images of Ghana fans leaving the stadium and chanting Suarez go home, and then just chanting Korea, South Korea over and over and over again. So this will be a fun round of 16 game. I wouldn't be surprised if there's one or two Ghana fans who have snuck in as well.
Lindsay, is there an international figure of hate for whom you'd be happy to see England go out of a tournament just as long as they got their comeuppance at the same time?
This could well happen because it's Neymar.
What? Why? Ooh. Why?
Oh, I don't like him. I've never bought into it.
Oh, really?
I don't like how he goes down. I hate the play acting. I hate how he thinks it's all about him. I know he's immensely talented. But already the narrative for this game against South Korea is an intimidation factor. You know, Neymar's fit to play. It's all going to be the headlines. They're trying it out. And South Korea are the perfect opposition to be culpable to buy it. Oh. So I really hope they don't. But Neymar, when I watch him, which is usually at international tournaments, occasional PSG matches in the Champions League, the odd game that I've dipped into over the years, like El Clasicos and things, I've never thought that he is the best player on the planet. And he clearly thinks he is. Brazil thinks he is. And I don't.
Wow.
Okay. There you go, Neymar.
Do you like him?
I think Neymar is one of the best football players we've seen with the ball at his feet. I can see why you'd find him very annoying with his play acting, but also he does get kicked to pieces a lot.
So does Jack Grealish.
So does Jack Grealish, yes. That's a good point. I think the things Neymar can do and the things he has been capable of doing are remarkable. And it is, I think it's a pity that he gets kicked the amount he does, because it means we can't see him as much. But yeah, I do understand.
I'm not saying he's not a special talent.
No,
I just like to hate him.
To be very clear, yeah, I get that. It was a, I sort of, can I describe it as a pantomime hatred?
Yeah, I would say that.
He's very good at cultivating a pantomime hatred. And when he comes on, you go boo, and then he does something amazing and you sort of boo him almost out of respect for the fact that he's quietened your boos. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's. I mean, that's a lot of what football's about, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
This game coming up Monday night and, of course, playing against the backdrop, hugely significant, particularly for Brazil, of the health of Pelé, who we were hunt. He put out a message on social media on Sunday saying that he felt stronger and not to worry and things like that. Fingers crossed. Anyway, Paulo Bento will be back on the bench for South Korea for that game against Brazil. He's the only foreign coach to take a nation in this World Cup into the knockout stages. The other foreign managers of sides in this tournament, they've all gone out. The winners of the match between South Korea and Brazil will face either Japan or Croatia in the quarterfinals. Croatia, who finished second in Morocco's group, they had a goalless draw with Morocco and one with Belgium, and they beat Canada 4-1. Japan, meanwhile, well, they'd got drawn in what looked like the toughest group of all, but then they shocked us by beating 2014 champions Germany and then went and did it again against the 2010 champions Spain, throwing in a random defeat against Costa Rica just for giggles along the way. How did they do this and what do people make of it back home? Earlier on Sunday, we spoke to Taz Okawa of DAZN Japan.
This tournament is kind of happening in the middle of the night over in Japan. So what has the mood been like?
Japan has been, one of the countries which is still quite, not hugely restrictive, but we still have a kind of COVID restriction and people are quite hesitant to go to, take off the masks and enjoy the football game. But that has certainly overcome. Well, after we won against Spain, Germany, people in the Shibuya crossings was like, it was like a chaotic and everybody was taking, having joy, me too. So it's the middle of night, but obviously the win against such a great countries made nations very excited. I mean, Japan is compared to England, it's not a huge football country, but if you turn on the TV every day now, whether it's morning or night or lunchtime, you see the football people talking about the Japan national team.
Has it been the greatest week for the men's team ever?
Yeah, definitely. We knew the group was a group of death. People obviously thinking Germany and Spain will go through, but we went through the group with as a leader. We never expected, and then. Loss against Costa Rica was quite disappointing, but still, we've done a miracle, I think. So, yeah, it's been amazing.
Or something more than a miracle, because there are a lot of similarities between the win over Germany, which felt like a huge surprise, and then again against Spain. In both matches against former champions, you went behind, but you didn't quit. And then Moriyasu-san's substitutions proved absolutely key.
Yeah. Actually, that was also actually a big surprise because having been watching the national team since he has taken over, he has been deploying four in the back. And in the Japan's basic formation was like 4-2-3-1. And then suddenly within the media, there was like, we were talking, the journalists were talking that he might have a secret strategy to bring the three in the back in the actual World Cup. But he actually started doing so from the second half of the game against Germany. We were thinking he's like a very conservative person and his kind of, substitution strategy was very conservative before, but he started to bring in the both wide attackers in the both wing backs and left and right. So obviously it's very attacking football. Obviously the game has been very Japan has thrown away the positions and decided to kind of stay in back and try to aim for the counter. But that has been something we never expected. It's more than a miracle. It's probably what they have done is changing the miracle to reality. So yeah, it's been a great week.
It has. Now Croatia, and I don't know if we can still call Japan underdogs. Is this the strongest side you've ever sent to the World Cup? And what is the difference then?
Actually, the biggest kind of expectations probably back in 2014 against Brazil when Alberto Zaccheroni was the manager. And at that time, I think we were very technical and had a lot of belief in positions. Like we had players, good players like Kagawa and Honda was still in his prime. So we were thinking that that kind of team was really good, but we didn't do well. This team has been like slightly maybe less technical, and we really struggled in the qualifiers. So that has made us, you know, disbelief against Moriesa and you know, the group against Spain and Germany was, we knew it's tough. So people in Japan was like slightly pessimistic. So that has been different. And also our only hope was Mitoma. Basically, there was a lot of debate around how the national team was selected, because we took up the striker Osako, who used to play in Germany, and he has been not selected from the World Cup squad, and that has been quite a big debate. And then Moriyasu-san was aiming to create a team of the counter attack. That has been quite a debate, because that means we are trying to throw away our kind of, you know, possession games.
If the mood was pessimistic before the World Cup started, how proud is Japan of the team now?
Oh, really high. So everybody, how to say in English, turn the hands upside down. I'm not sure how to say in English, but basically everything has changed. So everybody's proud of the team now. You know, I mean, they've done something which nobody was like expecting. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm really excited too. Looking forward to see more. I'm probably being more, how to say, greedy, but I would like to see more.
Tazakawa there of DAZN Japan. What do you reckon on their chances against Croatia then? Are they still the underdogs at this point, or have they now become the favourites, Lindsay?
I think they marginally have the favourite tag for this one because of the opposition they've beaten to get here, because they beat Spain, because they beat Germany, and also because Croatia have been a little limp. I think they haven't been nearly as good a team as the one we saw last World Cup. So this is a team that I think is on more of a downward trajectory with ageing players like Modric, like Lovren. And so Japan, who've managed to spring this surprise, I described it actually on the last show I was with you, James, as select press. And I think that's what they'll do here again. I don't think that they will press for a very long time, but when they select to do so, it has worked so well. And if they happen to have even a bit of success with that, it could really punish a Croatian sluggish defence that I think has had a few let-offs so far. So Japan could do it. I've adopted them for this one. I would like Japan to go through.
Wow.
Do you think if Japan are the slight favourites, does that not counteract the style of football they want to do?
I don't think that they... Because Croatia want possession.
Yes.
And Japan don't want possession.
Yes.
In fact, the last thing they need is possession, according to their results so far, because they had, 26% possession against Germany, they beat them. Against Spain, they had 17% possession, they beat them. The one time they had the majority possession was Costa Rica, and look how that turned out.
I understand it entirely, but Croatia's precise exact strength is when that midfield gets into gear. Oh. And they just start, you know, Brozovic, Kovacic, and Luka Modric, and I apologise for my pronunciation of all three of those names, but when that midfield clicks into gear, that is Croatia's big strength. And Lindsay, I'm completely with you in that this team, this Croatia team, does feel like slightly aging and on the decline a bit. So when they click into gear, they're amazing. I think it's taking them longer to click into gear than they did at 2018 and the Euros. But you gotta put someone in there. You gotta put a spanner in that work of that midfield. Otherwise, they will pull you apart.
And the reality is, Carl, that probably, when we know what we know about Croatia and their experience, is they will probably get over the line in this one, because I could see it going all the way. Extra time, penalties, but they've been there, they've done it.
That said, they're only in the last 16 because Lukaku lost his shooting boots.
Yes,
I mean, they are.
That is very true.
Here's a stat. I don't know how important this is. They've not conceded a goal in the second half of matches, Croatia, or even in the final 89 minutes of a match at this tournament, because they've only conceded one goal, and that was Alphonso Davies' header for Canada after 68 seconds. Mad, isn't it? Mad.
Itakura is suspended for this one, the Mönchengladbach player. I just want to say that I honestly think Tomiyasu will rip it up in this. I think he's been chomping at the bit. So that suspension, I'm just going to say now, watch Tomiyasu. He's going to get an assist or a goal, I think, in this game.
All right, Lindsay. Magnificent. Well, you can see if he lives up to Lindsay's prediction on Monday afternoon with the game between South Korea and Brazil coming up in the evening. And of course, straight after that, Totally returns with another Totally at the World Cup. Do hope you'll be joining us then, listener. But that brings us to the end of today's show, of course. Lindsay, thank you so much for being with us today. Carl as well. You too. Jack Pitbrook, Taz Okawa, and Julian Laurent. And producer Charlie. We'll be back with you tomorrow. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. Get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
The Athletic.